everybody. Welcome to the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience. I'm Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com. And I'm thrilled to actually have on the phone here today, we're going to be talking about the Bash, which is the Jazz Institute's 50th birthday bash that's happening June 28th through June 30th, mainly at the Logan Center for the Performing Arts in Hyde Park. And this is really interesting to me. I'm happy to have Mike Reed on the phone. Now, Mike and I could probably talk for 4 hours about everything he's got going on and all of the all of his experiences in life and music and running the Pitchfork Festival, owning Constellation, owning Hungry Brain, programming. He's the programming chair for the Chicago Jazz Festival. Plus, he's a working musician, traveling, recording, all of that. But I'm going to try not to go down those wormholes because he's got a new book that he's going to be actually revealing on June 30th at 5:30 p.m. at the Logan Center as part of this bash, the 50th birthday party for the Jazz Institute. And it's really interesting. It's called The City Was Yellow, Jazz and Improvised Music. It's essentially a fake book of Chicago tunes, but we're going to get all into that. Mike, thanks so much for jumping on and being on the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience.
Thanks for having me.
Definitely. So let's talk a little bit about this. You're going to be able to talk way more than I can. So why don't we just set it up? So this is The City Was Yellow, Jazz and Improvised Music book release. And before we jumped on and started recording, we talked a little bit about, you explained a little bit about it, but I'm going to let you explain to the listeners about it because I wouldn't do it justice. So what's this book all about?
Well, essentially, in short, it is a real book, a collection of essentially lead sheet compositions all made in Chicago from 1980 to 2010. So part of this project has kind of been an ongoing sort of pursuit of mine and looking at Chicago music scenes, jazz and improvised and blues scenes, really starting from like the mid 50s and onward. And I think there's so much information, so many stories and people that kind of get lost in the shuffle. And we kind of glom on to some large moments, some important large moments, but in that was kind of the everyday, you know, the gigs, the every nights that you're playing and places that you went to. And that really makes up a lot more of the fabric of the story. So when I started this quartet, People, Places, and Things in the late aughts, the premise was to sort of reinvestigate jazz music made in Chicago from 1954 to 1960, mostly the under-recognized people of that time period. So people like John Jenkins, of course, dusting off like Wilbur Campbell's compositions, things like that. And we kind of moved forward in time doing that as a group and reinventing it, musically. And so in that, we also were able to collaborate with people that were from that time period, like Ira Sullivan and Art Hoyle and Julian Priester. And of course, developing our own sort of approach and of course, our own original music. So this was something that's kind of been part of a longer sort of thought process of what makes up the stories and what makes up the sounds of a scene. A few years ago, two different places that are really dear to me, one, Amsterdam, there's a very rich scene there. They developed a book smaller than the one that I've put together, but it was essentially just a book of compositions called the Amsterdam Real Book. And so I thought that was really interesting. And then a few months later, I was in New Orleans and just being down there, the wealth of music and being a musician down there, there is a whole, catalog of New Orleans tunes that everybody's got to know. Whether you're in a funk band, a Zydeco band, even a punk rock band, it's like if somebody's going to call Tipitina, it's like, you know it. And so having like that sort of common language of material, harken back to some of this thing, some of the things that inspired me about the Chicago scenes. Specifically, if I think about the great record, Blown In from Chicago, Clifford Jordan, John Gilmore, the first tune that comes off of that, Status Quo is written by a pretty obscure tenor player, Chicago, John Neely. And you would be hard pressed to find recordings of John Neely, but it made me wonder, why are these two very well-known tenor players playing this piece. And it must mean that they knew John. They probably played this at sessions, and it was part of what their language was, the material language that they're using. So thinking about that, my more immediate time period, the time period that I'm kind of out of, the 90s and early 2000s, I was like, well, what tunes do we not play anymore? These great tunes that were put together, these great projects that were sort of the soundtrack to you know, me coming up. And why shouldn't we? We should think about them. We should tell the stories. We should hopefully be able to share that with people. And I'm not saying that it's going to become anything like, you know, like an anthem that some of the New Orleans tunes are, but maybe it's at least a starting point to sort of recognize our own sort of immediate histories and just talk about music. You know, I mean, with so much music that's out there and the access to of it today, we do very little to actually talk about it and have fandom about it, you know. Mm-hmm. So this is part of wanting to do that.
Well, you're also documenting. I mean, this is like stuff that nobody would ever hear, really. I mean, you know, the majority of people would never hear if you didn't put this together like this, because, you know, as a musician myself, I mean, there's a lot of tunes and things, and you know yourself, you're playing tunes, you're going to sessions. I mean, I came up in the 90s as well, so there's a lot of different things that we would play at sessions, but I mean, you would never, a lot of this might be lost if it wasn't for the documentation that you're putting together.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, that's also an unfortunate thing of the development of the music. You know, I mean, why do people call certain tunes at sessions? Why do they have them under their belts? Well, you know, we stop putting new pieces into the lexicon. And so maybe this is just a way to scratch your head about it a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to say that the things I've selected are going to all of a sudden be that, but maybe you might just have a unique approach to, like, hey, we should play that song from that record, really great record that I love, by my friend. Mm-hmm. So I think that's just that challenging the notion of how things kind of work a little bit, and seeing that the actual things that we are interested in are kind of right in front of us, and we should celebrate them a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it is documenting, like, so doing that with the recording. And I've done that, you know, with the actual bands, like People, Places, and Things, and also some Sun Ra projects. But this is doing it in a different sort of way, especially with, you know, audio. I hate to say this, but because we can make it very easily and also disseminate it so easily, it becomes also easily disposable.
Mm.
And that's unfortunate, you know. So I remember sitting in Hungry Brain a few years ago, somebody saying to me, tell me about all the people who are taping shows in New York. And they said, isn't this going to be great? You know, in 20 years, you'll be able to hear that Nate Woolley show where there was only six people at it. And I thought, it's like, well, maybe, but there's going to be so much junk out there, so much stuff to weed through. Good luck if you're ever going to find it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So here is a certain way of pointing, like, hey, folks, check this out, you know, in a different, I could make a playlist and put it on Spotify or whatever, but that's just adding to the noise of it. If I say, here's this book, and it's not just composition, so it's not just a technical manual for, you know, practitioners. There's also, you know, new bios in the book that I had a lot of, like, there was eight different writers who covered the scene during those time periods that came back to do new overviews of all the composers. There's beautiful photos from people who were shooting at the Hot House and at the Velvet and at the Mill, and of course the jazz festivals, the bop shops, like all the, you know, so there's a larger story to it that you know regular people who are just fans of the music can look and have this as a sort of coffee table book and enjoy it on that level. And really at the end, you can say, like, yeah, I don't know that tune. I'm going to go search it out and take a listen to it and hopefully be able to discuss it. So, you know, one of these things, and the main thing that occurred to me, like this, at a certain point, I was much further along at I think 70 some tunes. And I realized that it was never going to end, really, because, you know, I mean, there's so much material, and there's going to be a lot of stuff I didn't know about it, experiencing it. So when I saw that, you know, realized that the 50th anniversary for the Jazz Institute was on the horizon, I was like, you know what? What if we stop this at 50 and we could do this maybe with in conjunction with the Jazz Institute? Because I felt strange about, like, if we were going to sell the book, I wouldn't want to take any money for it as compiling an anthology. I was like, well, what if we could make the proceeds go to the Jazz Institute's links programs? You know,
that's as long a great as idea, yeah.
Yeah, as long as the publishing rights get paid for the composers, the rest of the proceeds could go there, as well as that. Hopefully this will be a great gateway to young people, people who've never heard this music, being having access or at least being told about this book and these people and these composers. So I, hopefully that's a, you know, a bridge there. One as a little bit of a fundraiser, you know, way for the Institute to make, generate income, hopefully also a bridge to these younger musicians, developing musicians, and also hopefully just a way to sort of talk about music. Yeah.
I think it's pretty interesting because, you know, you touched on a couple of different things that, make me think about this. Number one, you're absolutely right. I mean, how many kids that are, like, you know, just coming out of high college, I should say, that are in the Jazz Links program, even that are in high school and even younger, I mean, they might not be exposed to some of these artists ever. I mean, they might not find the recording or anything, but now they're going to maybe take a look at this and find out who some of these artists are and then find out who these artists listen to on the Chicago jazz scene. You know, I mean, because obviously, you know, as a musician yourself, I'm sure, you know, you got into one drummer when you first started off and then you learned who he listened to. And then all of a sudden there's hundreds of people that you ran into down the road as you're learning how to play. I mean, this opens up a gateway for that. But the other thing that I think is really interesting is, you know, you went down and you found these specific artists and these tunes and things like that. And like what you said, in New Orleans, there are certain tunes that everybody plays because that's the New Orleans repertoire, basically. You got to know this stuff, you know, or up in New York. I mean, they're the same kind of a thing. Maybe there's a little bit more well-known national stuff there, but I mean, that's coming out of New York. Same thing in L.A., Kansas City. I don't think there's anything like this in Chicago. I mean, where people will actually have, like, okay, you know what? These are really good tunes. Why are we not playing these more on a regular basis? So I think you're opening up a lot of different avenues for a lot of different people just by doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's, you know, it hopefully breeds more. I mean, Chicago's got a great community, but hopefully this adds to that, that, you know, an aspect that wasn't there before. Yeah. And just, you know, bonding over music. So yeah, that part of the project was kind of like why we got to 50, and marrying it to the 50th anniversary of the Jazz Institute, hence why the release is going to be part of the weekend. But you know, the other thing I also in that moment saw that this is never going to be definitive, and essentially I realized that that's really not the point. And of course people are going to come out and say, why isn't so in the book? You forgot about this. Yeah. Oh, don't you know about that? And if that happens and when it happens, then the whole premise for the book will kind of be complete, because it's about, like, sharing this stuff once again, you know. So I that's the card. I'm playing the invitation for people to please speak up about the music. And then, so it's like, I don't need to be definitive. This is for people to actually have that conversation together.
That's a great point. That's a great point, because, you know, that's exactly what's going to happen. You're going to, you know, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? Yeah. I'm curious about, did you go in, did you have to transcribe a lot of this stuff? Because you're probably pulling stuff off albums, right? I mean, that had to take a long time to pull things in and transcribe stuff, or how did that work?
Yeah. So, well, whenever possible, I did get music directly from composers, but I would say half of it was transcribed. Well, maybe two-thirds of it was transcribed. And so there was myself and four other people that worked on that. And then in the end, Joe Clark went in and sort of did all the editing to make everything uniform and make sure that, you know, we didn't miss anything. So, yeah, there was a team there that did it. At the beginning was me And then I was luckily got awarded a fellowship through United States Artists and Doris Duke, and some of that I used as funding to help finalize the project. And then luckily we got a very generous for the production of the project. The Friedman Family Foundation actually came in, thought this was a really great project, and then especially the partnership with the Jazz Institute, and so gave the Jazz Institute funds earmarked to complete the production of the book.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah. I know from, because I did the Joe Siegel biography with Joe a couple of years ago, and I don't think a lot of people understand, first of all, the amount of time it takes to do things like this or like any book. So there's a lot of that, but then also just the printing of it and putting the whole thing together and publishing of it. That's a whole other animal. And the fact that you're donating the money back after the proceeds, after the, you know, all the royalties and stuff are paid to the Jazz Institute's Jazz Links program, that's like incredible. So let me ask you this. Explain the title to us. So the City Was Yellow, Chicago Jazz and Improvised Music, 1980 to 2010.
Yeah. Yeah. So I remember looking at some old photos from the Bop Shop in the 90s. I had a steady gig there. And then I was looking at some old photos from the Get Me High, which I was only at once. Mm-hmm. And then some old photos from the Velvet. And it just mixed in from some, they're all different by different people. But there is this strange yellow quality to it. And I was looking at just some old photos of Chicago and had that same sort of thing. So that was there. One day I was looking at the newspaper and they're talking about how Chicago, like a lot of other cities, is now replacing their street lamps with these, you know, LED white light.
Right.
Essentially the way that the city is going to look is going to change quite a bit. And I was like, oh, and I thought about, I was like, you know, with all these compositions, I mean, they're different people, different styles, they're different places, some, you know, different time periods too, within that, you know, 3-decade run. But maybe the only thing that for me is the similar is like this is the way that it looked, and this yellow hue walking out of, you know, these clubs and, you know, after checking out Jeff Stightley Quartet or, you know, whatever it was, that's maybe the only thing that I can say that they share. And it was the first moment where I was like, well, what's related about this and how do you kind of draw the relationship? And it was maybe just the sort of way that I saw a time period.
Yeah.
You know, so and now drastically it will change in the way it looks. And that made me think about something else that was really important about the time period. It's not about stylistic approaches, but really it kind of came down to me, the two figures that sort of really loom large in the whole thing, and that'd be Von Freeman and Fred Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly, I mean, because they were so giving in their space and as entities that young people, developing people, and then also established artists would go to seek out, whether it was at the Velvet Lounge for Fred or the New Apartment Lounge for Von. These were like through line giants that everybody sort of felt anchored by.
Mm-hmm.
And they really kind of really come into their own in the beginning of the 80s. In my 2010, Fred passes away. At the beginning of 2011, Von plays his last gig and passes away in 2012. But essentially there's this whole thing that so many of us, and still, you know, we have a Von Freeman stage, are so still attached to, but there is now a whole swath and time period and people that will never experience that and never see the scene that way with that experience.
Yeah.
So kind of paralleling this whole, the way that the city looked with the, you know, the high pressure yellow street lamps.
You know what? It makes total sense, because it doesn't matter what genre of music, what style, anything that you're doing. You're right. It was always yellow. You walk out at 2 o'clock in the morning and the street lamps are yellow, and it's yellow. Now it's going to be blazing bright. It's going to seem like the sun's still up, I guess, you know. But, and you're right about Fred Anderson and Von Freeman, because I mean, I didn't even think about that, but I mean, there's going to be a whole generation of kids now that are coming up that never experienced either one of them, or never even experienced the Velvet or the Apartment Lounge or anything in between. So it's really, It's really interesting to me. And it's really interesting to me, this book, because I can't wait to read it and check out all the compositions in there. But let's talk about the event that's coming up on Sunday, June 30th, 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m., Logan Center Screening Room at the Logan Center for the Arts. It's on the second floor, 915 East 60th Street in Chicago. What can people expect to experience? So you guys are going to be there. Now, you're also going to be with two other panelists, John Corbett and Mike Alamana. And what's the whole presentation going to be like?
Well, yeah, you know, some of the stuff that we're talking about, and it's easy to talk one-on-one with you about the book and sort of its meaning, blah, 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 blah. But I figured that it's something, you know, when I go to these types of events and there's a panel, maybe it's better to, like, make it fun. So, you know, and also tackling that whole notion of, like, what could have been in the book. So the approach that I took, I was like, you know what, let's go up there almost like in a podcast style where we'll play snippets of music that could have been in the book and aren't. Or maybe we can also, if we really want to fan out on something that is in the book, we can play snippets from that. And then also snippets just of music about Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, so and just try and make it fun and just essentially do what I hope the book does, which is let's fan out. And like do fandom about music and talk about it and, you know, hopefully take some questions from the audience and maybe suggestions from the audience and just do it that way as a sort of a starting point from let's talk about music.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're right because I've been at a lot of those different panel discussions and it can get very academic and everybody's talking and, you know, but I think what you're talking about is you want the audience to chime in on things, ask questions, and that's going to lead your conversation depending on what the questions are and depending on what you as the panelists are talking about or listening to and things. I think it's going to be very organic.
Yeah, I hope so. And, you know, hopefully people will hear some things that they haven't heard before and hopefully I'll hear some too. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, it sounds great. So everyone listening to this, you've got to head over there. So it's June 30th, 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. at the Logan Center. Obviously, all the information is at jazzinchicago.org. They've got a big birthday bash section on their website. And Mike, what website should we steer them to check out where you're performing? I mean, you're performing everywhere. So, I mean, you know, what you have happening. Is it just mikereed-music.com? Is that the good one?
It's mikereed-music.com. Yes, that's right. That is right.
That is right. So we'll have them check that out. And hopefully you and I can sit down and we'll do a feature interview at some point. We can talk about everything else you have happening because, I mean, it's incredible to me, everything you have going, plus you're releasing this book. I mean, you know, I don't know when you sleep, but, you know, it's pretty impressive.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And look forward to hopefully seeing this on June 30th and definitely want to check out the book. So I appreciate everything. And of course, everyone, you've got to go check this out. Jazzinchicago.org. And until next time, appreciate everyone for listening to the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience.